Next, an unlikely advocate for pilotless drones. Missy Cummings spent years landing F-18 fighter jets for the U.S. Navy, but these days she studies unmanned systems like drones. She's director of Duke University's Humans and Autonomy Lab. That's HAL, for all you 2001 Space Odyssey fans. Charles Monroe Kane talked with Missy about a few of the ways drones are being used outside the military, and about how someone who used to fly the real thing fell in love with drones.
Around 1994, I transitioned to the F-18 Hornet, which is a computer-controlled aircraft. And I was blown away. The airplane at that time could land itself just fine on the aircraft carrier. And worse was, you weren't even allowed to touch anything on takeoff. You actually had to show that your hands were not touching anything inside the aircraft before they would shoot you off the carrier, because if a pilot touched anything inside the aircraft, they would only screw it up. So I think, you know, that really started to make me wonder about the future and why was I actually in the cockpit in the first place if the plane could do it almost all by itself.
You know, Missy, I grew up really working class, and I can just picture my uncle or my father really not liking this new technology and how it works. Do you feel like this transition was a good thing, or do you feel it was inevitable?
You know, there's a little bit of both of that. I also come from a very blue-collar world, kind of a agriculture farming environment. But, you know, I saw it very quickly because so many of my friends were dying. Being in that, inside that environment, watching people die, understanding just how quickly the automation was advancing, it really did help push me down the path of research. And I was one of the early researchers in unmanned aerial vehicles, which we commonly refer to as drones now. And I will tell you that I'm amazed at the rapid pace of the commercial development. I thought we would be this, where we are today is where we would be in 5 to 10 years. And so I'm really impressed with the global response to the commercial capabilities of these aircraft.
Well, where are we today? I mean, outside of the military, how else are drones being used?
Well, I think it's important to stipulate that there are ways that it's being used in other parts of the world and the ways that we want to use them inside of the United States. So, for example, Japan has been using drones to do their crop dusting for over 20 years. In fact, the bulk of their crop dusting is now done by these flying robots. And we recognize in this country that we want to do that and we need to do that. That's, in fact, one of the most dangerous jobs of general aviation, lots of crashes and deaths. So we need to get that person out of the cockpit, but the FAA regulations right now prohibit that. Other uses are first response, search and rescue. There was a case recently in Wisconsin where an older gentleman was lost for 3 days and they couldn't find him. And then a guy popped up a drone and within 20 minutes they were able to locate him and save his life.
Amazing.
And so local law enforcement agencies around the country are desperate to get this technology because it's phenomenally cheaper, orders of magnitude cheaper than flying manned aircraft. And so ultimately it's a savings to the taxpayer, but also an improvement in safety and efficiency. And so we're still struggling. And then, of course, the cargo world. There are companies that are putting vaccination delivery together in Africa, for example. But even in this country, not in this country, although it's part of a U.S. military program, there were a couple of drone helicopters over in Afghanistan, the K-MAX, that these two little helicopters trucked around over 3 million pounds of goods.
Wow.
Back and forth. And it saved countless lives because it took the convoy trucks off the roads and out of the way of IEDs. And so those kinds of cargo missions, I think, will be up and coming. But I can guarantee you that all the large cargo aircraft, FedEx, DHL, UPS, are going to be looking at how to actually turn their aircraft into drones. They're the next big wave of large aircraft drones.
You know, for most Americans, there's an 800-pound elephant in the room that we're not talking about, and that is privacy. And I thought about this the other day. Have you wrapped your head around privacy and drones and just them taking pictures of us everywhere?
Drones do take pictures. Many drones actually navigate and stabilize through pictures that they take of the ground. And so it is true that these are moving cameras through the world. But what it's hard to conceive of is that the actual field of view of these cameras is very small. And it's not like you have a big camera that's taking huge, you know, pictures of huge tracts of land, and then we're able to pinpoint anything out of those pictures. The pictures are there, and whether or not they're recorded, it really depends on the system. And so I do think that it potentially, drones who have cameras on board, potentially could violate your privacy, which is why local and state legislatures, as well as the federal government, need to step in. So, you know, for example, if you've got a drone doing, let's say it's an Amazon drone that's using cameras to help navigate. So what they will do, we need some policies like, okay, the cameras, whatever recordings we take, are going to be held for 48 hours after a flight, and then they're going to be destroyed, for example. And so I think that if people understood that this is just part of the way that the drones have to operate and that we are going to protect your data, I think once people understood that, they would be more accepting of the technology. But the FAA's current policy of just not addressing it at all, or state legislatures that just ban all drones, are actually doing much more harm than good, because they only feed into that paranoia and fear and don't actually do anything proactive to address the situation. And in fact, they hamper what is otherwise a booming economy elsewhere.
Well, also, I was thinking about that when you're speaking about the FAA. I mean, what are the regulations around just airspace? They're not just privacy. Simple thing is airspace.
Right. And this is actually the catch-22 of what the FAA currently has in place. Right now, you, as just an average person, can go out and fly a drone as long as you stay below 400 feet and out of populated areas. But there's no requirements of training. There's no requirements of certification. Me, as a researcher who's been doing drone research for over 10 years, I am not allowed to go out and fly under those same conditions that you are to conduct research to find out how to better design ground control stations without going through an arduous certification and authorization process through the FAA that may or may not be approved. And so what we have in the world right now in this country is we have basically a bunch of hobbyists and people who really don't know anything about drones who are able to fly, you know, in these unrestricted airspace areas, whereas people who know what they're doing are not allowed to. And that's important because companies are not allowed to go out and do not even commercial operations, but they can't even do test and evaluation like they need to figure out what the operations would look like.
Missy, could you daydream for me for a moment here as we end? Like, maybe shut your eyes and tell me if 25 years from now, 50 years from now, where will drones be in our lives?
They will be your flying car. You know, this is the dream. We've got the driverless car that's coming up basically at the same time as the commercial advancement of drones. And one day, Zipcar and Google and Terrafuego, that's a rotable aircraft company, are all going to get together and we're going to have this amazing flying car.
Can I ask you a personal question? You've flown the Hornet, and before that you've flown the fully manned aircraft, and now you're certainly, I guess, piloting drones. What about the fun difference? I mean, you must love flying, right? You're a serious pilot.
Yeah.
Is it any fun to be a part of doing drones?
It's a great question because, you know, when I do this environment, you know, when I'm in this environment, I kind of have this, heh, at least I got mine, you know, at least I got to fly.
I got to fly high.
I did. But I have to tell you, when I was in my 20s, I was in the military. I was in the Philippines. I was flying A-4s, and we were out of control. We were flying low. We were dangerous. And boy, did I tell you, I have my hair on fire, and it's given me a lot of my chutzpah and confidence that I have as an adult now. And I have to tell you, it was amazingly fun, but we were also amazingly unsafe. And aircraft now are so expensive. You know, the F-18 that I flew was about $60 million, and that was not including any weapons. And so, you know, we just can't take those chances anymore. Although I will tell you, my students have fun flying it, but I don't think that they could ever know what it's like to go, you know, 25 feet over the ground, kicking up a rooster tail, going along down inside of a trench, inside of a volcanic area. It's pretty fun.
That does sound like fun. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Missy Cummings directs the Humans and Autonomy Lab at Duke University. She talked with Charles Monroe Kane. Coming up, a former U.S. Air Force drone operator takes us inside his world, piloting unmanned missions in Afghanistan and Pakistan. I'm Ann Strainchamps. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International.